Cube's Big Three is back. The most physical, fierce, and competitive basketball league on earth returns to CBS this Saturday. Three-time Big Three MVP ISO Joe Johnson and the reloaded Detroit Amps battle two-time Big Three championship coach Steven Jackson's DMV trilogy, followed by Big Three's most intense rivalry. Defending champions Miami 305 and Michael Beasley chasing his third straight MVP take on Dwight Howard, coach Nick Young, and the LA Riot. Watch Big Three Saturday, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific on CBS. Catch replays Monday, 8 p.m. on BET.
Another win over the weekend, another Monday with a Boren Blitz to break it all down for Ohio State. Welcome to The Beat. I am Austin Ward. He is former Ohio State captain Zach Boren, and even better, he was on the sideline in Champaign, Illinois at Memorial Stadium on Saturday to watch the Buckeyes win 34-16 over the number 17 ranked Illini. I thought it was a pretty good win, Zach. I know that there's some opinions that might vary about if Ohio State could have won by more, if there's areas that are concerning, if there's still room to grow, and maybe all of that can be true, but you win by 18 in a situation like that against, I thought, a really good Illinois team. I think you take that 100 times out of 100.
Yeah, you know, it was a really weird game. It was an extremely long game. there was the momentum swings and the pace of play of the game were just odd. There were a whole bunch of weird things that transpired during that game. But at the end of the day, you go on the road, you play an Illinois team that's ranked 17th in the country, a very good team. I thought Luke Altmyer was outstanding on Saturday. But at the end of the day, you go on the road and win by 18 points. I think if you told anyone before the game that, hey, we're going to come out of here with an 18-point victory, everyone would have taken it and ran with it and would have been extremely happy. So, yeah, are there things to work on? For sure. Were the Buckeyes firing on all cylinders? No, but that is a hell of a win. And that Illinois team is going to do some damage throughout the rest of the year. They are going to finish this season with a really good record, go to a really good bowl game. That's a respectable team that Ohio State beat.
Yeah, and I think that, at least for me, I was trying to balance it out a little bit because you said it was weird on Saturday, and I agree because there certainly was a scenario where Ohio State could win that game by four or five touchdowns. But, you know, watching later what USC did to Michigan, and keeping in mind that Illinois had just, you know, handled that team in Memorial Stadium a couple of weeks ago, you know, I think that added a little bit more validity to what Illinois had done. And even the Indiana win at Oregon, putting that on their resume, maybe the Hoosiers were just that good and that game got out of hand for Illinois. We know what the score was, but I'm not trying to retroactively justify it, but I thought I was impressed by Illinois. Their resume got a little bit better based on what their opponents and the one that they beat did later on. And like that's why I don't think Ohio State comes out of that. They picked up the Illibuck. There were a lot of smiles. A lot of people felt really good as they left the stadium. And I think that they had reason to. That doesn't mean that at the same time there aren't some things that we'll look at that have maybe lingered for a couple weeks and special teams or red zone efficiency. The defense actually gave up two touchdowns for the first time this season. Like, there's certainly things that Ohio State will emphasize once they get back on the practice field on Tuesday. But I can't bring myself to be like, you know what? Because they didn't win by 30 points, that wasn't a good win. It was a good win.
Austin, you brought up a great point from the standpoint of what Illinois did to USC 2 weeks ago. I mean, yes, the final score is 34-32, but they dominated that football game. I mean, I think at one point they were up by three scores against USC, and then USC made a late charge. And then you look at the Indiana game, and Ryan Day said multiple times during the game week, you have to throw that game out. If people go back and watch that game, Indiana sacked Illinois eight times. There was a blocked punt, I'm pretty sure, for a touchdown. Multiple turnovers. Like, that's an anomaly of a game, right? And you could tell just once Illinois went into halftime, they were defeated and they just turned over in the second half. And that's why it was as big of a blowout as it was. In saying that, this Illinois team and what they did, and especially seeing what USC did to Michigan on Saturday night, this is a damn good football team, right? Every team across the country, doesn't matter if you are the greatest team of the century, you are going to have a down game. It is what it is. There's going to be games where you're not coming out fighting on firing on all cylinders. The ball's going to bounce a different way. Like, it happens to everyone, happens to every great team. this Illinois team, that was their Indiana game, right? Well, guess what? Ohio State, it sure seemed like that was possibly Saturday against Illinois. And when you sit back and you realize they beat that Illinois team by 18 points, where Luke Altmaier was on fire, that defensive front for Illinois was very good. To your point, we were on the sidelines. That was a big defensive front seven for Illinois, man. They were thick. They fought hard. That's a good football team. And let's look at the pedigree of Brett Bielema and how he builds his programs. What he did at Wisconsin way back when, it was being able to run the football, being able to defend the run, like do those things. Now, Illinois, they ran the football okay, but it was Luke Altmaier in that RPO offense that Brett Bielema has changed a little bit. But again, it goes back to being big on the front seven in defense, big offensive line, being able to control the football game. That's what he does, right? So for everyone to think like, man, this is, you know, an OU or this is a Rutgers or like a Minnesota, like that's not the same football team. This Illinois team is going to be when you look at the end of the year, probably be top five in the Big Ten in the final standings.
Yeah, I think they will be. And I came away impressed with them and the way that they fought. They had good plans on both sides of the football. And they also had an opportunity to capitalize on that because we saw, you know, by Ryan Day's own admission, Ohio State lose focus and maybe take their foot off the gas a little bit in the second half. And I know that that's one of the things that when Ryan Day has talked after games about being desperate and hungry, that he's trying to fight off that sense of complacency. But Ohio State had built such a comfortable lead and it was so clear that they were never going to lose that game. Like that's also the human nature part. You're going to ease off a little bit. You know that you still have, you know, six games to go after that. You're going back on the road to Camp Randall the next week. You're going to start you've been out there, Zach. Your attention is going to drift when you're that comfortably ahead and you know that you're not going to lose that game. And I'm not bringing up any of that to say, hey, that's okay for Ohio State to drop its guard for a moment. But I understand how that happens. And if they're able to because I thought they started, there was Ryan Day was asked about like starting slow. They came out and asserted themselves on both sides of the football right away. You know, they did have to settle for that field goal early, but they were forcing turnovers, which is not something they had done really in the first five games. They forced three of them on Saturday. It was another level for Matt Patricia's defense to get to. And I think we'll probably talk a lot more about Jermaine Matthews later on here on the Bourne Blitz. But like, they did start fast. They built a lead. And then it was like, okay, we've handled the business. And that's also part of the challenge of coaching college-age kids, but also the balance of this NFL-style approach that Ohio State has adjusted. They did not need to max out and win this game by 50 to impress a selection committee or rack up style points for the AP poll. Like an 18-point win is the same as a 1-point win. But I thought that you take that every single time, and if you coast to the finish line once in six games while you're 6-0, that's okay in my mind.
Yeah. Ryan Day said coast to the finish line, and you said that as well. I don't know if it's coast to the finish line. It's, hey, Illinois's got some dudes, right? Illinois can play. Like, I don't know how many times we have to sit here or people who know college football or football in general have to sit here and say, Illinois is a good football team, right? Like, I think sometimes being fans, supporters involved in the Ohio State program, you have these – elevated expectations of every game's going to be a blowout unless you're, you know, playing in a normal year, like a Penn State, an Oregon, a Michigan, like something like that. Like people have come to expect that every game's a blowout unless you're playing a blue blood football program. And that's not the way it is. Like this was such a great game. I think if we were to ask anyone going into Saturday morning in Champaign, when we're sitting there at 8 a.m. in the morning, drinking our coffee, hey, we're going to come out of here with an 18-point victory, I think everyone would have taken it and ran with it and said, oh my God, yeah, I'll be extremely happy. So for anyone to sit here and not be excited, happy with this team, with this performance in the direction that they're going, especially when we all know they weren't firing on all cylinders, like that should be a vote of confidence for the entire fan base, for the program, for everyone knowing, hey, listen, we didn't capitalize on all the turnovers, right? We had some sloppy penalties in special teams. We gave up two touchdowns from a defense standpoint, which is crazy to say, right? There are so many things. Like, we didn't run the ball as great as we wanted to. We didn't throw the ball as great as we wanted to, right? Like, you could go down the list for all the things that you didn't do as great as you wanted to, and you still won a very good football game. And then you go on the road next week to Wisconsin. Again, obviously a reeling program, but then you sit there with a bye week within November in front of you of a championship stretch. So to know that, hey, listen, we got a lot of learning from Saturday. It was a great victory against a very good football team. And now guess what? We can build on it through the Wisconsin into November on this championship run.
Do any of those things that you mentioned, Zach, those areas of improvement from Saturday, you know, some of them have lingered for a couple of weeks. If we're talking about, you know, for me, I think that'd be, you know, the run game and some of the success down there in the red zone or short yardage. Like, that's not the first time we've seen that. And, you know, they've placed a couple really good defenses. So I think that that's part of it. You know, Texas and Illinois are, you're going to look back and be in some of the more physical fronts and better defensive talents that you're going to see all year. Do any of them, or maybe which one do you find the most concerning that you'd be thinking about if you're Ryan Day and this week ahead getting ready for Wisconsin?
There's only two things, and I'm going to say almost one of them's legit. The other one's kind of nitpicky, but the two things, obviously, the first one's red zone offense. And I think this is just being nitpicky, right? Because it's not like Ohio State's had the inability to score. We've scored. They just haven't been as efficient in the red zone, right? Like once throughout the entire field, I think the offense is so dynamic and so good that then once it gets in the red zone, everyone's expecting perfection because they expect to see what they've seen as they drove the ball all the way down the field. But what everyone's got to realize is when you get into the red zone, the field shrinks, right? Like what you can play kind of gets numbered. The threat of Carnell and Jeremiah going deep really isn't there anymore, right? Like, now you can't out-athlete people in a smaller space. And so it's something to look at. I think it's nitpicky, but it's something that I think because it has been quote-unquote lingering, that it's something to say, hey, we should probably look into this. The one thing that bothers me from Saturday, and it's the one thing that, hey, we should be like, hey, this is not okay, the penalties on special teams. Yeah. Uncalled for, their mental mistakes. As I said, you're not going to go into every game and be super crisp. You're not going to go into every game and Julian Saint throw for 300 yards, Jeremiah and Carnell, you know, catch 100, run for 150 yards and have explosive plays left and right. Not going to happen every game. But what you can't have is mental mistakes. Guys not running out on the field when they're supposed to. Like, the two delayed games were because there were 10 guys on the field and not 11, right? Like, those are problems that's not the ball bouncing a different way or just not having that it factor on that day. Yeah. Those are sloppy. That's sloppiness. And so that's where I think that's the one thing that Ryan and this coaching staff really need to dive into and be like, who wasn't out there? Where's the communication? I know normally in a game, once you get to third down, there's a guy, a coach on the sideline that gets punt return, whoever it might be, right? You're round up. They count them all. Everyone goes out there and does punt return, right? So for that to be a mistake, especially the bigger one was, I think, right before halftime, right? And you knew Illinois was going to be coming after the punt out there with 10 guys. Hey,
yeah,
we should be more locked in at this point. That's the one thing that's worrisome of me. But again, that's a quick fix in my mind, right? You either get 11 guys who want to be out on the field or you figure out a process of making sure you got 11 out on the field every time.
Yeah, I mean, I hope it's a quick fix, Zach, but you and I have been talking about special teams breakdowns for 5 years now. I mean, they've changed the special teams coordinator. They've handed out more responsibilities across the coaching staff. They have the best roster in America. And the fact that special teams continues to be such a hindrance to Ohio State is like the most baffling thing in the world to me. I cannot understand it. I there's no explanation for it. And it's not just lingered this year. It's been going on for a really long time. And I get sick of talking about it, but you know, hidden yardage, and it did not keep Ohio State obviously from winning a national championship a year ago, but you know, they missed a couple field goals in the game last year. It cost them the rivalry. And so it can bite you if you're giving opponents free yardage, and whether that's on penalties or whether that's not maximizing punt or, you know, mishandling kickoffs, like it seems like it's something every single week. And I don't understand why it hasn't been fixed.
That's why I brought it up as something that Ryan's going to look into, right? I think they know it's a problem. I think this year, compared to last year, they're putting more emphasis on it. They're giving people more responsibility over special teams. Why that hasn't turned into something more productive, there's some questions around that. But guess what? They're going to figure it out. It hasn't come close to costing them a game this year, right? You hope it never gets to that point. You could ask so many questions with special teams, but special teams, I hate to say it, like there's a complexity to special teams, because outside of the kicker, punter, and long snapper, to everyone, it's their secondary position, right? Sure. So there's a complexity there of being so focused on your role with offense and defense to then flipping the switch and going to special teams, especially at Ohio State, it's been this way since I played, and I know it'll continue to be this way. So many times, key contributors on the team, starters, whatever it might be, are playing on special teams. It's not like it's all backup players, right? Probably 85%, 90% of special teams players are starters on offense and defense. So you have to be able to switch on and off, and you have to be able to go from, hey, my primary role to then my secondary role with special teams. And there can be a lapse of attention detail. There can be a lapse of, hey, I got this stuck in my mind because I got beat on a comeback, you know, on third down, and it's messing with my head. And I got to get out on punt return now, or punt, whatever it might be. So they need to figure that out. I wouldn't be super worried. One thing I might be a little bit worried about, our punt average, right? Granted, Jaden Fielding hasn't had many issues with field goals this year, so knock on wood with that. But we have to be able to punt the ball further, right? Like we are Ohio State. We should be averaging towards the top of the Big Ten, which should be, you know, 45 and above. And I think Saturday we averaged 38 maybe yards per punt, something like that.
Yeah, the second one was, I remember, went for 34. Let me double check right here what we had from Joe McGuire. Four punts for 151 yards, 37.8 yards per punt with a long of 41, Zach. Yeah, that's not the standard.
Not ideal. Especially I don't think any of them, I'm pretty sure none of them were pooch punts either, right? No, they were all, hey, drop it and bang it.
Yeah. Silver bullets, though. I think they'll still feel pretty good. Matt Patricia was still smiling after the game, even though they, you know, had their worst performance of the year, 16 whole points allowed on the road against Illinois. I think we'll get to the three and out. Jermaine Matthews was my defensive MVP, not just because of his hand in forcing those two turnovers, one with the forced fumble on the sack and the blitz, also deflecting a ball that Peyton Pierce intercepted. Like having to do that from a different position than, as you said, you have a primary and a secondary and then a special teams position. If you're maybe Jermaine Matthews, you know, he's moving inside to the slot with Lorenzo Styles out. And he, I thought, was awesome.
I thought he played great as well. The other thing that no one's talking about after this game is another goal line stand by this defense, right? Like late in the second quarter, and your backs are against the wall. You knew you had to make a stop because Illinois is getting the ball to start the second half, and you dig your heels in and hold them to a field goal. I mean, absolutely unbelievable. Great job. We say it almost every week. I'd love to do a study on this defense over their last 8 to 9 games of their goal line defense or red zone defense and what those statistics are. But I thought they played really well. They obviously faced an offense this year in an RPO system that was unlike any offense they've played this year. So your first time looking at it, I'll be honest with you. As a linebacker, defensive player, I hated going up against an RPO offense. Just hated it because your reads have to be a half a second slower, right? Because if you come down on the run, the ball's going right behind you with the RPO. So your reads are a little bit slower. You can't attack as much as you want to. And let's be honest, this defense loves to attack. Arvell Reese, Sonny Styles, right? Like this defensive line loves coming downhill and attacking offenses. In an RPO, you can't really do that. And that's where I think you saw Illinois have some success, because when Ohio State did become aggressive, right, Luke Altmyer pulls the ball and hits a little slant right over the middle, and guess what? They get 9-10 yards. And it's a great offense. Like I said, I've got so much respect for Luke Altmyer and what Illinois was able to do on Saturday. But again, you only give up 16 points, right? You make the plays when they need to be made. Jermaine Matthews played his butt off. You still, you know, Sonny Styles and Arvell Reese were all over the field when they're getting threatened with the run in the pass. We could sit here and obviously mention some areas where they probably need to be a little bit better, call it getting after the quarterback from a pass rush. Although, you already said this, I was on the field on Saturday. I think I counted more than my 10 fingers the times where they were holding the hell out of our defensive line Nothing was called. I mean, it was unbelievable. Arvell Reese had three himself where they were just holding on to him. And
Kenyatta got tackled to the ground and they were like, nope, it's good. Play on.
Caden Curry one time was backwards being held, being hugged, and couldn't get off of him. And they didn't call it. It was right in front of the head referee. Don't get me started on the refs, right? That's a whole nother thing.
Yeah.
But the inability to get after the quarterback, they might be looking at that a little bit. And then obviously the pass interference calls, right? There were more than we've had throughout the entire year. Got to get our heads around. It's just the small attention, the detail things that have to be cleaned up. But man, defense, another great performance on the road. There's one thing that we've learned, that Ohio State fans have learned. Defense travels, man. Yep. Defense travels. So when you go out there and you put out a performance like this Ohio State defense did on the road, your chances of winning that game go way up.
Yeah, and thinking about another game that happened over the weekend elsewhere, watching what Washington did on Friday night, that offense is absolutely firing again.
DeMond Williams, I think, went for over 500 yards by himself.
Yeah, you know, just file that one away about that Ohio State defense as well as part of its resume. All right, get us out of here with a little three and out, Zach.
Yeah, my third star, my guys, the linebacker core, Arvell Reese, Sonny Styles, played an outstanding game, man. Those guys together, I don't even know the nicknames that you can give them, because both of them are like, they're aliens. Both of them are. Yeah. I know someone dropped that name about aliens, but my God, man, seeing those guys, the way they're able to play inside the tackles, the way they're able to go sideline to sideline, unbelievable from that standpoint. So man, I'm going to give it to those guys. My second Buckeye Leaf, which might surprise some people based off performance, but I'm going to go with the offensive line. And the whole reason why I say that is because they kept Julian Sane clean the entire day, literally kept him clean. Now, could they have been maybe a little bit better in the run game? Yes. But when you keep your quarterback clean and they are playing the way they are, and Illinois threw some stuff at them, right? Like we talked about this, that Illinois defense line were some dudes, man. They were thick, big dudes that could be the biggest guys that they're going to see throughout the year. I mean, I know Penn State's a little undersized. Michigan obviously isn't the defensive line that they've had this year. But when you look at that Illinois front, those were some grown-ass men. And so the offensive line holding up again, going on the road, man, letting Julian Sane feel comfortable in the pocket, make the throws when he needs to. Love it. The number one, you already said it, Jermaine Matthews. Two turnovers. Early on in the game, getting his hand in there for the Peyton Pierce interception, going to the slot position, lining up against Beedy, their best player by far. You saw what they did with number 80, Beedy. He going into the game, he did everything for them. And so for Jermaine Matthews to match up on him in a new position, do what he did, outstanding. Obviously, the strip sack you know, in the I think that was the third quarter. That was a huge turning point in the game. It almost put the nail in the coffin, so to speak, from that standpoint. So Jermaine Matthews, man, a huge fan of him. Absolute stud.
All right. That got the Buckeyes to 6-0. 34-16 winners at Illinois on Saturday. Game number 7 on deck. They are heading to Camp Randall. That will be a 3:30 Eastern kickoff on
Sunday. Fighting Fickles, man.
They need to show a little fight for Fick. We'll probably talk about your experience and Bobby's experience with him because we've got you for a Monday as well, not just on a Boren Blitz. Roosters with the live show. Can't wait for that. Going to have a lot of insight there in this Wisconsin matchup, and we'll look back one more time at what happened on Saturday against Illinois. Again, Buckeyes are past the midway point of the season now. They're still undefeated. They're still number one in the country, and they're still looking to get even better.
Austin, you failed to mention one thing.
Yeah?
They're bowl eligible.
Oh, what could be better than that? You and Bob.
We're going bowling.
That's a milestone.
We're going bowling.
I can't believe I left that part out. I'm only thinking about the playoff and where Ohio State's going to be on New Year's Day, but you're right. It could be somewhere else. I doubt it at the rate that they're going. But look at this guy. Another young linebacker.
Yes, we are. We love our Buckeyes, don't we? Go Bucks. When we need to make an appearance, so we're doing it. We're doing it this week, aren't we, buddy?
The first one, the debut. All right. Yes. Well, look at that hair coming in. My goodness.
I know.
Just gets it from his dad, I'm sure. On to the next one. Ohio State at Wisconsin. Next week, we'll break it down with Zach Bourne and maybe Baby Bourne, too. We'll see what we get going and when we can
create a new segment of some point, like towards the end. I don't know. We'll do something with you.
We need to have him and Liberty break it down. They could probably do it better than we can. thanks for joining us on the beat to start this week, this Wisconsin week. He is Zach Bourne. I am Austin Ward. We'll talk to you later.
Ice Cube's Big 3 is back. The most physical, fierce, and competitive basketball league on earth returns to CBS this Saturday. Three-time Big 3 MVP ISO Joe Johnson and the reloaded Detroit Amps battle two-time Big 3 championship coach Steven Jackson's DMV trilogy, followed by Big 3's most intense rivalry. Defending champions Miami 305 and Michael Beasley chasing his third straight MVP take on Dwight Howard, coach Nick Young, and the LA Riot. Watch Big 3 Saturday, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific on CBS. Catch replays Monday, 8 p.m. on BET.